Hi everyone, welcome back to the Haworth Timber and Building Supplies 1840 podcast. I'm Paul Bullivant and I'm pleased to be your host. The beating heart of our business are our 37 branches and the teams of people that we have in them. So on a regular basis, we're going to pick one of our branches and highlight them in one of these episodes. We'll be inviting the branch manager to come across with maybe one or two of his colleagues and talk about the ups and downs of the branch, the history of the branch, and how they go about trying to stand out from the crowd, because we don't take it for granted that our customers have lots of choice within all the towns that we trade in. So today I'm pleased to invite our first branch to do this, and that's our Oldham branch. And I have great pleasure in welcoming Paul Ferns and Jan Eunice to come and join us.
Thank you, Paul.
Welcome, gentlemen.
Good afternoon, Paul.
And we'll just start off by in turn just getting you to introduce yourselves to our vast audience. Just talk a little bit about yourselves, your career history, what you've done before you've come to Haworth, what you do at Haworth. So Jan, should we start with you?
Start with me, yeah. So I'm Jan Eunice. I've only been with the company for 6 months. Okay. I've started as an exterior sales executive and I'm finding my feet in the branch and I'm, yeah.
What did you do before you came and joined us?
So before I was at Travis Perkins. So I did about 7 years in Travis Perkins.
Yeah. Was that Travis Perkins Builders Merchants?
And Benchmarks. Kitchens, yeah, okay. Kitchens and Joinery. So yeah. I started as a kitchen designer at that store, yeah. And I worked my way up to be a branch manager.
And what got you into Travis and Benchmarks and kitchen designing?
My previous to that role was 14 years in B&Q.
Okay. Right.
So I really enjoyed my time at B&Q as well.
Yeah.
I started as a customer advisor.
Yeah.
I had a bit of a funny story joining B&Q. So back in my early days, I used to work at a bakery. And going to work, I was on a double-decker bus. And every single day was driving up and down. And one day I thought, I want to go and work for B&Q. I fancied working at B&Q, like DIY young lad. So I rang him up and I said, Liz, have you got any vacancies? And I remember Vanessa at the time and HR said, yeah, absolutely, come down for an interview. Can you come this afternoon? I was like, yeah, I'll finish work 3 o'clock and I'll come straight down. Had my interview. And the same day, they offered me the job.
Amazing.
And they took me role in sales. So I said, look, I'm really good at sales. I can sell. And they said, would you work in the kitchens department? And that was it. My weekend job at B&Q, selling kitchens, and weekdays doing quality control, checking bread.
Uh-huh.
I did really well in B&Q, and I ended up leaving the factory to go work full-time at B&Q.
What's quality control in the bread factory?
Yeah, I was checking the temperatures of the bread, making sure the wheat was...
It wasn't eating.
Oh, no, definitely not eating.
I'd put on about 5 stone if I had that. I'd just be eating it all the
time. Literally.
So literally, your move into the building industry was purely because the bus drove past B&Q.
Yeah, big orange sign right above the bushes, like B&Q. I thought, I'm having a bit of that.
And so I guess, how long have you been in building?
So I started in B&Q November 2003. I've still got my contract, actually. Oh, my first ever contract, a proper contract of working. I've still got it.
So that's 21, so you've done 21 years in building?
21 years.
Because you drove past on a bus?
Yeah, and we started with a weekend job, and then gradually got full time. I did really well in B&Q, become a trade point supervisor.
Okay.
And then, do you know, the hardest part of my life was, after 14 years, in B&Q, making a decision to move to Travis Perkins.
Imagine that.
And literally, that's where my life changed, because I was so comfortable in B&Q, I just thought, do you know what, I want to change. I want to challenge myself.
Yeah.
I went to Travis Perkins as a kitchen designer in one of their shops, Benchmarks.
Yeah.
And from there, I did pretty well. You know, got made a good trade base, got some good relationships. And then I got offered an apprenticeship at Travis.
Okay.
And for me, again, that was something that I really took on board. And I was one of the first ones to get a distinction in the apprenticeship. And then I become the poster boy. So that was funny.
You
still are,
right?
I still am. So if you do type in Jan Eunice,
apprenticeship. You come as the face of TP.
Face of TP. Apprenticeships, yeah.
Never had you down as a male model.
Literally, now did I. And then I got hunted by Haworth Timber.
Okay.
And then that took me some thought to move over, but I thought, do you know what, let's try something different. Right. I've never been an exterior sales rep.
Yeah.
And the funniest thing is I've never ever sold building materials. So I did it good 15, 18 years ago in B&Q, but not really heavy side.
So it's quite a gamble for you then, moving business, moving product sectors.
I promise you, I must have rang so many traders beforehand and said, listen, I'm going to move away from the soft side to come on to the heavy side. What do you think? And I had so many mixed reviews. Jang, that's not you. Or Jang, you'll be brilliant. Or Jang this. I was like, right, it's time to make my own choice.
And what helped you make that decision?
Well, doing kitchens for so many years, I already knew I mastered that department.
Yeah.
And I wanted to, again, take myself out of the comfort zone to go and try something really different. And I thought, right, I'll get something else under my career.
Yeah.
But wow, there's so many building materials to learn. You know, from bricks, blocks, sand, cement, different measurements.
You've made good grounds in 6 months, but you've got a way to go.
I've got a long way to go, I think.
great example of our transferable skills. So he had the sales skills. He just needed to bring that to the building materials. And his enthusiasm is infectious, so everybody's catching it, you know. Everybody wants to sell, don't they?
Yeah.
What's your favourite Ebbside materials?
Lintels at the moment.
Lovely. Dead easy,
yeah. 1800 mil, 1200 mil. So at the moment we're just selling a lot of roof tiles as well, so okay. that's kicked off really well.
Oh, well done. Well, welcome aboard. Good to have you.
Thank you very much.
I thank God that bus drove past B&Q and got you started.
Definitely.
Yeah. Paul, over to you.
I was a bit of a late starter in the building game, really. I was a civil servant for 22 years.
Okay.
And I took a voluntary exit package in 2013. I knew I was going to take some time off because I'd never not worked. I'd just gone from, I've had about three jobs in my life, but I'd gone over a week.
What kind of civil servant?
So prison service.
In prison, okay.
Yeah, so I'd left the army and I finished on the Friday.
Yeah.
And I started on the Monday, with the prison service. There's no gaps in my career. Okay. So when I left the service in 2013.
And where were you?
In the prison office. So I worked, it was national recruitment when I joined. So my first jail was Bedford.
Okay.
I got sent down there. I did a year in Bedford, and then I had to crawl my way back up north. So after a year, I was allowed to pick five jails in the northwest. Manchester was closed at the time because of the riot. So I picked Preston, Hindley, Risley, Stile, and Leeds was my last choice. So I got Leeds.
It's like coming home then, is it? Coming in
yeah.
today.
So I ended up at Armley for 3 years. Then Manchester came back online after the riot about 1994, 1995.
So by Manchester you mean Strangeways?
Yeah, but they'd renamed it when they reopened after the riot. It wasn't called Strangeways anymore, it was HMP Manchester.
So it was just a rebrand, to forget.
Yeah, yeah. Rebranding. Yeah, and a new owner. Because it had been market tested as well. So
just stop there a minute. Dave, you've got a picture for us, haven't you? You can show us.
Oh, yeah. Oh, wow. Oh dear.
So man. That's Paul as a prison officer, Strangeways.
One of the few pictures you'll find of me in uniform. But I used to walk around with that clipboard. I did 12 years with that clipboard. Nobody ever asked me what I was doing.
And that was the key to looking after prisoners,
yeah,
was it?
Yeah. Just walk around with a clipboard.
Fantastic. You want to look about 18 there?
Yeah, I was 33.
33? God, you were a young-looking 33.
33. I still look young now. Nearly 60 now.
Does he, Jack?
Yeah, so 2013, left the prison service, took a voluntary exit. I knew I was going to take some time off, and I talked about it in my head 6 months. And in the March, my son got diagnosed with type 1 diabetes in the December.
Right.
So it was good that I was off work and taking a bit of time at home to get him sort of settled into that and his routines and so on and so forth. And then in the March 2014, my wife came home from work and said, go and get an haircut and get a job. You know, just been lying on the couch for 6 months, so looking a bit of a tramp. So I said, I mean, I had all sorts of ideas when I was leaving the prison service. I was going to start my own business and I was going to do this. And I wanted a second hand shop. I really, really wanted to say, because I was into amplifiers and speakers and guitars, and I've always been in bands and singing, and my sons are in bands and so on and so forth. So I wanted a second hand shop because I was.
So just stop you there. So you're singing's a big.
Massive, yeah.
Massive,
yeah. Part of your life. I did the Stars in Their Eyes, but I'd run karaoke's, and after the Stars in Their Eyes, I formed a band around the Manchester area.
So we'll just stop there again. Dave, I think you've got something else to show us, haven't you?
Oh, no.
So what were these pictures? Do you want to just tell us the story quickly of Stars in Their Eyes?
Yeah, so there'd been a guy on Stars in Their Eyes, did Paul Weller about 5-10 years before that. And I was like, oh no, it's not, that's not right, that's not right. And my wife said, well, if you think it's not right, go and do it yourself. So I just had a, recording that a mate of mine had done at his little studio. I had the recording and I had the photographs and I had anyway, I just sent it in and forgot about it. And I was in Oldham at the time in the town centre, and I got I got a phone call on the mobile phone, you know, nobody ever phoned you on a mobile phone. And it was this girl that said, you know, it's such and such money from Stars and Rouse. I was like, yeah, of course it is. It was one of my mates winding me up, you know. Anyway, when I got home, there was a message on the answer phone at home as well. I got the phone call to go and I had to go and do the audition and everything. And I went on Stars and Their Eyes.
Well, I think we should just show the viewers.
No, I don't think we should.
We should show the viewers a bit of you on Stars and Their Eyes.
Definitely.
Oh, here no. We go.
I love the moon pop.
Look at that. Matthew Kelly said to me at the side of the stage, he said, we got in touch with Paul Weller, his dad asked him if he'd like to give you a guitar for coming on the show. And his dad said, yeah, no problem, we'll send one down. Anyway, apparently Paul Weller came back and said, he gives too much away, you can cough.
So Paul Weller snubbed you?
yeah, he snubbed
you. And did you win?
Come second.
You better, can we just tell everybody who you came second to?
No.
Come on, this is embarrassing.
I forgot.
I know, because I've only watched you. You came second
actually,
to David Cassidy.
David Cassidy. Yeah.
David Cassidy beat Paul Weller, can you believe that? Thanks, Dave.
It was a megastar, David Cassidy.
Yeah. It was not Paul Weller. So, we've ruined the story now. So no, you've done Stars in Your Eyes.
Yeah, we've done that.
So your wife said, get off the sofa and find a job.
Yeah, so and I had big ideas about what I was going to do. No idea what I was going to do. So she said, just go to an agency and do a bit of driving. So I went to an agency in Oldham and just took my driving licence on the Thursday night, I think it was. And she said, can you be at the woman in there? Can you be at our timber at Ashton tomorrow morning at 7 o'clock? So I said, yeah, no problem. So I turned up at 7 o'clock and there was nobody there. I didn't open till 7:30 at the time. So I stood around for a while. And I ended up driving the van, the pickup van, for a couple of weeks.
Right.
Absolutely loved it. My first, I didn't know at the time the vans had trackers on, so my first job when I left Ashton was I drove to my missus's work so she could see me in my new pickup van. And then I got on with my deliveries. I absolutely loved that job. I only did it for 2 weeks. And then that fell about. And then Rob Bailey,
yep.
He was branch manager at Ashton at the time. He's a regional manager now, but he was branch manager at the time. And he said to me, you know, do you want a full-time job? So I was like, I'm thinking I'm driving this van all day long, superb. He said, it's not in the van, it's in the yard. So I was like, oh, yeah, well, you know, I needed something to do. I was at that stage where I needed something to do. So I worked in the yard. I worked in the yard for 10 months. And what I found myself doing in the yard for 10 months was asking questions. I was the king of asking stupid questions because... Oh, my dad was a joiner and I knew what a sheet of plywood was, I knew what a bit of 3x2 was, but there's so much more to the building game and to what our timber sell. Jan mentioned lintels and so on, you know, products, 20,000 different products at least. And I didn't know.
Is Jan following you as king of the stupid question now?
Yeah, he is.
The more you ask, the more you learn.
Yeah, no, it is. I say that laughing, but that is how you learn, isn't it? If you don't know, ask.
Yeah. You've got to ask them questions, and he is asking, you know, what's this one? And then we encourage that, because if you don't ask them questions, you're never going to know it, are you? So I did a bit of time in the yard at Ashton, got my stripes. Then the assistant manager job came up at Manchester branch and I applied for that and got that. Moved to Manchester, I did 2 years there. Then the sales exec job came up at Oldham. I applied for that. Didn't get it initially, but then 3 months later, the guy that employed wasn't really cutting it. And I was given a shot at the sales exec at Oldham. I did that for 2 years, and the branch manager job came up. And in 2019, Ian Williams gave me the branch manager job.
Oh, nice. So you've had a really good move through the business then.
Our timber are brilliant for that though, for moving people through the business. I mean, I've had some really good transition and some promotions, but I've also seen a lot of other staff moving through the ranks and getting promoted. So, you know, the company likes to promote from within.
I think we see that, don't we, across the board.
Absolutely.
I think if you've learnt your trade in the yard, you've learnt all the products, it's easier to sell them because you've been lifting them, you know, into backs of vans and like, haven't you? Okay, so you took over as branch manager in... 2019. What was the branch like when you took over?
Well, Oldham Branch is a heavy side builders merchants. It's quite rough and ready.
Yep.
It's probably the best way to describe it. It probably needs some investment now and maybe a new kitchen showroom or something like that. It was like the Wild West. Yeah, there was a very strange culture in the branch. You know, some customers thought they could just take things without paying for them, and that was okay. So stock losses I had to get on top of, and just my main focus was to reduce stock losses because they were high,
yep.
And to sort of increase the margin on sales, which was what was needed at the time.
Okay.
And that, you know, that kind of worked. And then we had COVID, didn't we? Not.
So how did you make those changes in those early days up to COVID? Because they're both big things, aren't they? If you've got a theft problem, getting to the bottom of it and solving it is not a 2-minute job.
The stock losses was about challenging people.
Okay.
You're given a telly ticket. So if you serve somebody, you give them a telly ticket. So it was about yard staff checking that customer had what those materials, and then checking that. More presence from myself in the yard and also on the CCTV cameras and watching what was going on. And it gradually reduced. As the more you challenge people, the more they kind of think, well, you're not going to get away with it. So that's how the stock losses came down. And then keeping on top of that, you know, to keep the stock losses down. That just worked. That just happened. Building the margin was more difficult until we sort of hit COVID, where everything went
through the roof.
Yeah, it went crazy, didn't it?
What was your experience of COVID at
TP? Somewhat similar. We was furloughed for about 9 months.
Yeah.
But when people started coming back to get the bits, it was hectic.
Was it benchmarks?
Benchmarks, yeah.
Okay. Just doing kitchens.
Just doing kitchens. So we was as bad as the TP down the road.
Yeah.
They had queues down the road to get the main bits, the plaster, the multi-finish, the sand, the cement. But we was classed as an essential company.
Yes, service.
Yeah, service. It wasn't a good time to be, but we got through it.
Yeah.
TP were absolutely brilliant with supporting their staff.
Yeah.
Likewise, I think Howard Timber or something similar. Very similar.
Oh, nice. So what were any specifically big challenges that you had to face when you were trying to establish yourself as a first-time branch manager?
I'd had a lot of management skills from the prison service because that's managing people all day long.
Yeah.
And some particularly challenging people as well.
Yeah.
So I got that role. I was fine with that. It was more still the, do I know enough?
Yeah.
There's so much you don't know until you learn it. And it's only when you get a phone call to say you've not done this or you've not done that or, you know, what's this, what's that? Like, I have no idea. So nobody ever told me that. So it was picking them sort of things.
How did that make you feel when you kind of realised there's a lot of stuff I don't know? Did that knock your confidence at all or...?
I've always been super confident, Paul. I've got probably a bit too confident sometimes, but... No, you try and soak it all up, don't you? And just, don't make the same mistake twice, but it's okay to make a mistake the first time.
I mean, I asked the question because, and I think
it's imposter syndrome, you can ask about it.
And it kind of applies to us all, doesn't it? You can't, none of us know everything about what we're doing, but you can kind of get to a position, and I think it comes a bit with age and experience, where you're comfortable not knowing. And when something comes up that you don't know, you don't panic. You know how to solve it because you've solved it, you know, time and time again in the past.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
But were there anything stand out really negative and bad in that first phase when you're trying to establish yourself as branch manager with a lack of builders merchants knowledge?
I remember that the first 3 days I couldn't sit in the manager's desk. Because I had a separate desk as a sales exec. At first, I was really uncomfortable with moving across to the manager's desk, and not because I didn't think I was capable of the job, or I was kind of thinking, move the office around, put the desk somewhere else. I didn't want to be that person. Okay. You know, I didn't want to be there. I wanted to move it. I wanted to change something.
Was that imposter syndrome, do you think, looking back at it now?
Yeah, potentially it could have been. Yeah. I don't remember thinking I'm not capable of doing the job. I was more like I didn't want to sit in that seat. I needed it different. I needed something different. You know, I didn't like what I'd seen before.
Okay.
So I needed something different, and I didn't want the staff to see the same thing, because they're all the same staff.
Yeah.
They're not all the same staff now. But I think I've only got one member of staff from when I took over the branch.
How many staff do you have?
19.
So that's quite a big change then.
Yeah. Some through natural wastage, some people move on, leave. Yeah. Jan's been to a different builder's merchant. Yeah. So
did you get the support from the staff moving from a exec to a manager? Obviously that's a bit of a transition from the
I'd done well as a sales exec.
Yep.
So the staff knew that I was going to work. You know, they knew that I'm not going to work as in going to work, but I was going to graft, I was going to put a shift in.
Yeah.
Because as a sales exec, I'd always been in the branch at 7 o'clock in the morning, and I'd never left till sort of gone four. Because I had this imposter syndrome. I had this, as long as they see me doing it, then, you know, it's, because as a sales exec, you can work from home, you can come and go as you please, like you do, Jang.
Is that a compliment?
That's a compliment.
Joking. He's absolutely brilliant.
As a sales exec, I mean, I'm going to ask you about this in a minute. I reckon the sales exec role is the toughest role in a builder's merchant.
100%.
I really do. When I had a go at it when I was 20, and I absolutely bombed. Yeah, I couldn't handle the constant rejection.
That's young for a sales.
Yeah, well, I was maybe young, but for me, going through my career, it's been a really invaluable lesson about how tough it is, because it just everybody looks at a sales exec. Oh, it's easy to come, as you were just laughing about. Oh, they come and go. You know, do what you want. It's a tough old job. So, you know, I do get. We're going to come back to you on that one and ask your thoughts on how you're seeing it after 6 months. So you've come, you've struggled with imposter syndrome. That's a common theme in these episodes, by the way. We've talked about it with Gavin and Steve. We've got an episode coming up with Rob Bailey and Cameron Reed, who have just moved from branch managers to regional managers. And they've talked to me about how they've feel the imposter syndrome of moving up. I think it's quite, you know, natural for us to do all that. Gone into COVID, that's been carnage. Well, that was just a matter of hanging on, wasn't it? Open, if you can get the doors open and you've got some stock on the shelf, that was all you had to do. And then, of course, the last couple of years, we've seen the downturn and everything that's come with that. What are your biggest challenges now?
The competitive market.
Yep.
The economy. The government budgets keep going up and down, don't they? Yeah. I think customers are more aware of pricing things now, so they're more price aware, and they shop around a lot more.
Yeah.
So whereas you used to get your loyal customers that would just shop with you regardless, they're few and far between now.
But I think we'd all do that, wouldn't we? Yeah. You know, because they're getting squeezed at the front end with their customers, and so it just knocks down. How do you keep the team motivated and positive, because there's such a lot of bad news going on, cost of living crisis, fuel bills going up, interest rates going up. How do you pull the team together?
I think if you ask any branch manager or regional manager, when regional managers have said it when they come into the branch, if I'm down, the whole branch is down. That just spreads like wildfire.
Yeah.
So I've got to stay positive and keep and drive the team and be happy and smiling.
I think we've got a good team in Oldham, though.
Really good team, yeah. I think that comes from such a good mix of staff, because we've got probably 7 or 8 female staff.
Okay.
Which is quite...
That's a high percentage.
Yeah, very high percentage.
For most merchants. For in what kind of roles?
So transport manager, shop manager... administrator, yard operative, stock controller.
Oh, so it's a real mix. It's not kind of in the classic female roles in the builders.
And they're all brilliant. So I'm not just saying that because they'll probably get to hear it. But they all do a fantastic job. All of them, really good.
I mean, since I've come, I think we've gelled so well. Like a good team, like a bit of a family. To be fair,
it is, literally,
sometimes I'll come in a bit down, but you'll get Hannah who'll say something, or Lee Robinson, the assistant manager. We're just a good team. We just we have a little banter between ourselves, which keeps us going for the day. But we have a
The girls have their own night out that we're not allowed on. So they have a girls' night out like once a month where they got, but the chaps aren't allowed.
That's good though, that there's a network of people that all bring energy and whatever, because we all, it's just normal for all of us as human beings, isn't it, to have our flat spots and our ups and our downs. So to always have a mix of people who can help lift is really important, because to be resilient in difficult times, that's tough, isn't it? It is, particularly for you leading a team when you're kind of taking in the messages from centre around budgets and what have you, and you're trying to protect as much as you can your team whilst driving them to deliver on what they need to.
One of the regional director is just retiring, Ian Williams. I think he was excellent at that.
Yeah,
filtering out stuff that branch managers didn't necessarily need to know, because that information overload can drag you down as well.
Yeah,
and Ian used to. He blocked that out, like they don't need to know that, and we know he did that. They only need so much information. They don't drag them down with that. Let them get on with the job. Let them get on with selling. Let them get on with running a branch.
Yeah. Okay. So just picking up on that about the Oldham team now. What's kind of the DNA of the branch? What's your big USP? Why would a customer pick Howarth Timber at Oldham rather than the raft of other merchants that there are in the town? Because like in every town, there's loads of choice now for people. Why do you stand out? What's the...
Can I answer that?
Yeah,
coming from just 6 months into the business, one thing I've learned from these guys is they've got really, really good product knowledge. From about 3-4 of them in the branch, people come in, even by doing building for the last 15 to 20 years, come to ask these guys about the new stuff, up-to-date stuff. These guys have got really, really good knowledge.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm bouncing on, right, picking it up, off these guys.
I think USP is the team. I think people buy people, don't we? We all sell 3x2, 4x2, on the merchants up the road sell 3x2, 4x2, sand, cement, but they haven't got a Jeanette on the counter, they haven't got a Hannah doing the deliveries, they haven't got a Lee Howarth taking their order.
Yeah.
Sales exec.
They haven't got a Django's on missing list.
and doesn't know anything. That's a real good USP, that sets you apart.
No, I mean, Django's been, 6 months he's been with us now, and he's been fantastic.
Thank you.
Absolutely brilliant, brought so many new customers in, fitted in fantastic with the team. Just another piece of the jigsaw that's gone clunk, into place. But it's the people in the branch. The yard staff, I've got Natalie in the yard. Customers forever commenting on how polite Natalie is and pleasant. Steve in the yard, customers always complaining about Steve's attitude.
That's why I brought Natalie in, so that she can
balance it out. Yeah. It's the people. It's the people in the branch that.
So that would be your USP. Would that be always part of your game plan now? Hypothetically, we set up another branch and we move you to another branch. Would that be your main, outside of all the basics? Would that be your key thing? Build the right team with the right attitude.
100%. If you get that wrong, then you've no chance.
And how do you make when you recruit? How do you make sure you get the right attitude and personality?
I've failed on the last two. It's a real, really, really difficult. Becoming more and more difficult. Whether people don't want to work or whether they're better off on benefits, or I don't know what the answer is. But actually recruiting really good quality staff who want to turn up on time. I'm a bit of a stickler for timings.
Right.
Yeah. They want to turn up on time. For me, just if you start work at 7, get out of bed and get to work for 7. Yeah. It's just dead simple. But actually recruiting quality staff at the minute is really difficult.
It's just tough going.
Really difficult, yeah.
And I suppose whether anybody fits is a little bit luck of the draw. Yeah. Until somebody starts, you don't know whether they're quite going to...
Everybody can say the right thing at interview, can't they? Or the CV can say the right thing, for a 20-40 minute interview, you can say the right thing.
Yeah.
And then actually getting into the role and doing the job is a different thing.
Yeah, okay. So coming back to you and the sales exec role.
Yeah.
What on earth possessed you to want to get sales rep in after 20 years?
Do you know what I'm really good at? Is I'm a people's person. So what I thought was, why deal with staff that don't want to come to work when I can deal with people who want to buy and, you know, and want to come to me for a reason. Like I say, people do buy from people, and I'm a really, really firm believer in that. So I don't take rejection as a bad thing. I take rejection as a positive thing. When someone rejects that they don't want to buy from me, that's my challenge then to say, right, okay,
you not think this you don't
time.
Want me.
Yeah, I'll come and get. And I think I've won because I'm not from Oldham, but I've
where are you from?
I'm from Ashton,
right? Okay.
And I've worked in Ashton all my life, and then Manchester Central. Yeah. So coming to Oldham, Oldham is a tough market, and I've learned that in the 6 months I've been there. The customers that Oldham have got, like I say, there's so many competitors that they don't mind me saying they're penny pinching Oldham.
What, you don't think they do anywhere else?
Well, not as much as Oldham.
Be careful what you say, yeah, people listening.
Literally, not as much as Oldham, which is a good thing because everyone wants to save money. And I'm a firm believer, if I'm a customer, which I am,
yeah,
I want the best deal. And that's what it all comes down to, looking after your customers, giving them the best prices, beating our competitors for them customers to come to us. So I'm passionate about, I'm passionate about getting new customers on board, but like really looking after them. And when someone says to me, no, I'm not coming to you, I then want to know why. So I go the extra mile to say, right, okay, listen, don't come and buy from me. Let me have a meeting with you and let me understand why you don't want to come and see me.
They stalk them.
A little bit.
Submission.
A little bit, yeah. I go on their sites, you know. I'll stalk them with a coffee and a biscuit.
A donut.
Yeah, donut. It does work.
Yeah. Like a from, and I mean this in the right way, a nice inside job where people are generally coming to
me,
you, rather than you having to go out there and knock on doors in all weathers, trying to get a conversation with somebody who don't want to talk to you. What possessed you to want to make that change?
So when at Benchmarks, no matter what you did, you had to go out and go and get your food. Right. In other words, like, you've got a Howardens on every corner.
Yeah.
And I believe if I don't go and grab them, someone else will. Yeah?
Yeah.
And what I mean, grab them, I mean, like, obviously put the arm around them, mollycoddle them to come and buy from me.
Yeah.
You know, if you've got the right products, the right price,
yeah,
the right service, yeah, there's no reason why someone shouldn't shop with you. They're my three main massive things that I'm proud of. You could easily have the best price. You could easily have the product on the shelf. But if you give bad service, they ain't coming back.
No.
It was easy for me to manage an exec and say, go get it. And then 9 times out of 10, they probably won't bring anything back. They'll spend all day. And I'm thinking, it's not hard. Opportunity, that's my biggest thing. Find an opportunity and go and grab it. I would literally sit outside a competitor and stalk you know, and not in a bad way, but I'll just make that phone call. Hiya, I've just gone past your van, and you know, is there anything that I could supply you from House Timbers option?
How do you stop people rejecting you, knocking you back?
So everyone gets rejections, but if you go in on a positive attitude at the beginning,
yeah,
with, rather than, there's tactics to everything, and I think my tactic
don't
works for me.
Away,
yeah,
by the way.
Yeah. What works for me is see what they're buying, see what they're working on, see what they're building,
yeah,
and just go in with a good price, and that's it. I can get you for that price. You might say, I've never seen you in my life. Who are you? I'm like, oh, right, well, I'm from House Timber, and this is what we can do. I can get you that cheaper. I can get you this better. I don't know. It just flows for me. I don't want to sound big-headed, but I don't take rejection as a bad thing. I take it as a good thing. I take it as another opportunity to go back and get him.
I like
so,
it.
So, I don't know.
It's, I can't weird. Imagine we'll be bringing many people to sit in this chair while we're recording these and asking them, how do you handle rejection? And you going, oh, I just love it. Give me more.
I genuinely do that. Like, it's crazy, Paul. You see me in action. It's like...
It's, you know what it is? He's so hungry,
yeah,
to sell. He's got that real hunger to sell, and you get excited by that.
Have you always been hungry for success and full of energy and
so
positivity?
This is how hungry I've been. I was, when I started at B&Q, I said to him, I used to work at British Gas and sell on the phones, and that's why I'm a good salesperson. And then from that, I was a lead taker, just a normal lead taker taking a name and address.
Yeah.
And I thought, I don't want that. I want to be a kitchen designer, because the designers with the shirt, shoes and ties. And I thought, I made my way to that. From there, I did really well in sales.
Yeah.
And then obviously I got headhunted to go TP, bless Richard. And then I did really well there. So wherever I go, I always believe in just doing your best.
So where does that hunger and resilience and drive come from? Is it your?
It's in my belly. I don't know why.
Is it your mum and dad? Or
it must be. It must be one of them. From their DNAs, honestly. Yeah.
But it's got to come from. It's always got to come from somewhere.
I know. It's a weird one, Paul, because like whenever I'm listening in the office, and I'm always listening to the counter, I'm always listening to the phone, and whenever someone's like talking about sales, and I'm thinking of value. Then is it high value? I want to go meet them. If someone's on the counter and they're ordering something, what they're buying next? What me and Paul are trying to do now is like, so I go on site and I said to Paul, I don't understand one thing. He goes, what? I said, I'm going to sell them bricks, blocks, sand, cement. We're doing the foundation. Why are we not doing the interior, like the kitchens and bathrooms? And so far we've sold about 3 kitchens just by not having a showroom. This is our hunger, yeah.
So I'm assuming he'll be putting in for a showroom then at next budget.
I think he's trying to. So from a brochure.
I think you better take him to talk to them rather than me doing it. Nick's got no chance.
But again, it's an opportunity. And that's what, if we all look for an opportunity, you don't know what comes out of it. That's what I believe.
Where do you think you could be in 5 years' time?
In your seat.
I watched my back. I was thinking you were going to say his seat. I was going to say watch your back, but I'll watch mine.
Good answer.
What's next for the branch?
Hopefully a kitchen showroom. I think it needs some investment. I need to probably have a chat with Rob and speak to Nick. Rob's on board with that, actually. I've had a couple of chats with him, but we probably need to sit down and nail some figures down. But it does need some investment.
Generally across the branch?
Yeah, we were just before COVID, we'd had the plans drawn up and it had gone out to tender. And then when the prices came back in, they doubled in value where we had it at. And it was just too much to do or to pay, knowing that building materials would come down. So it was put on the back burner, but I think the plans are still there and they last for a few years, don't they? But I maybe that would change now to maybe a different model within the branch. Yeah, maybe some refurbishment. A little bit of investment.
If you had to score the branch out of 10, one being garbage and 10 being the best the branch could ever be, where's Oldham now?
Number one branch northwest. Always has been. So probably at a 5. But having said that,
haven't you 5?
Yeah, we're.
Is that not a bit harsh on yourself?
No. It needs some investment. Having said that, we've only got a little shop and it's quite old, but it's absolutely gold because Jeanette works so hard in there, and it's the best shop on the patch, isn't it? It's the neatest shop on the patch. Everything's in order, everything's faced up, everything's, you know, it looks fantastic in there. And she's just on the Christmas decorations as well, because we're still coming up to Christmas. So. Maybe a 5 or 6. We need some investment.
What would you say?
I'd say definitely. When I first walked up for the interview with Paul, I was dreading it. I thought, where am I walking into? And genuinely, I was walking around River Park. I wanted to turn around and walk away. I thought, I don't want to work here. But do you know what? It's the people again. So when I walked into the branch and I sat down with Paul, I'm not just saying it because he's an amazing guy. If anyone wants support, Paul really gives it. But yeah, it definitely needs something. Because
So you walked up the ramp, and it is an old branch. It's been, I think we've had it since 1995, and you were telling me earlier that you think it goes back. So we acquired it in 1995 when we bought a company called Austin Timber, yep. And you reckon there could have been a timber builders merchants on that site for probably 100 years.
I've got an overhead photograph, that won't be 100 years old, but there's an overhead photograph of the branch, and it shows it's kind of split into two. There must have been two companies on there at one point.
Yeah.
But it's sort of surrounded by mills. Obviously, it's called Medlock Sawmills. Probably 100 years it's been.
Okay. So you're walking up for an interview. You're walking up to the ramp. It's looking a little bit old and a little bit tired. And you're already thinking, I don't think this is for me.
Honestly.
How long did it take between that and you changing your mind?
Well, we walked up to the office, if I remember rightly, and I think it was Paul's, because it comes down to passion. Paul was passionate about that branch.
Yeah.
And I liked to make a change, and I could clearly see Paul wanted to make a change. And I thought, and I like to go to places where I could make a change. Yeah. I don't want to just fit in.
Yeah, going to the finished article. Yeah. You want to be able to contribute. Yeah.
Contribute. And I think after having a good chat with Paul, I thought, right, okay, we'll settle in here and we'll do something really well. And I think we've took off really well.
So how do you get, so if you've walked in and felt that, others will walk there and feel that. How do you go about trying to get them over the threshold to experience the atmosphere and the team and the people?
I think it's dark in that shed. I think there's a lighting could change.
So how do you get them through the door? What's the pull? Because clearly, from everything that you've talked about and what I know, you're well known for having a good team, positivity, all that really good stuff. You're the most positive person I've ever met in my life.
Thank you.
How do you get them through the door to work your magic on them?
That's my job.
We've got a regular customer base. Obviously, we've got customers that we see every day, and sometimes twice a day, sometimes three times a day, because builders can't plank on it. So some of them, I've offered them a job. I've seen them not many times that day.
What, more than Jan?
Do you want to start working? Yeah. Do you want to start working here? You've been here four times today. We've got a regular customer base, and then there's obviously word of mouth. We get a lot of sort of random phone calls, people asking, and that's a big part of how you deal with people on the phone to get them into the door. And then we've got Jang on the road. We have our wagon drivers have an incentive if they see sites out on the road to come back and let Jang know. Jang can then go out, you know. And then there's people search on the internet for builders merchants. We're pretty much top of the pile there.
I think our delivery service is good as well. Like I can ring the office and say, I've got this order. Can we get it out next day or day after?
Okay.
I think the delivery service is really good. That's another one of my positives why I say come to me, because I'll get your delivery out ASAP.
Right, yeah, okay.
And I think we're pretty good on that side as well.
Yeah. So if we were bringing another sales exec in with you, never sales exec before.
I'll teach him well.
Yeah, I know. I was going to say, give us your secrets. What's your three secret tips? Tell them, if you're going to tell somebody three things that you must do if you're going to be a sales exec.
One is definitely, firstly, you've got to remain positive.
Yeah.
And you've got to be really, really upbeat all times.
Yeah.
And I mean genuinely like upbeat, because positivity sells, in my opinion.
Yeah, agreed.
And then do not promise if you can't deliver. Do not ever, ever, and I always say to the guys, look, if we can get it out, then I'll promise them. If not,
I won't.
And then thirdly is, I'd like to say, my job is just service, and that's what it is. It's service. Service with a smile, and go out and just have a good time. And as long as you're having a good time, you'll do really well. Yeah, you'll win.
I like it. And then same question to you, but in your role as branch manager, if new guys taken over, never branch managed before, your three big tips.
Never lie to anybody. You always get caught out.
Yep.
Positivity and delivery. So that's not just job taking somebody's order, that's delivering the sale. So advising people, helping people out, getting the goods to the right place at the right time, in the right condition.
Now kind of slightly the other side of the coin from that. What's the biggest mistake you've ever made, and what did you learn from it?
Oh, wow. Do I make mistakes? No,
you won't make mistakes.
No, I won't. That's a tough question, that, Paul, honestly. I'll have to come back to that. Right.
Have you got one?
I don't know. You might want to cut this out afterwards, I don't know. I caught a senior member of staff stealing. I'm not sure I dealt with it in the right way.
Okay.
I think I dealt with it in the right way, but what I wasn't able to do was to get my story across.
Right, okay.
Because it was confidential.
Yeah.
And then another story came out that was completely wrong. and maybe I'd have dealt with that differently. Maybe that was a mistake.
Well, maybe not a mistake. Maybe it's just something you'd never experienced before.
Yeah. And so,
I would have dealt with it differently. If you know, that's fine. Okay. Anything else you'd like to talk about Oldham before we start to wrap up?
Oh, come and visit us. Oldham's a fantastic branch, full of great people. We'll make you a coffee.
And if you don't, Jang's going to come and stop.
Yeah. Oldham's a fantastic place, very diverse. A great town to walk around. There's a lot of culture. Winston Churchill was MP for
MP,
Oldham.
Yeah.
1900s, yeah. A lot of history in Oldham.
Before I did this, I thought, I'm just going to look about Oldham. There's something special in the water there in Oldham, by the looks of things. Famous people who come from Oldham, born and bred. Sarah Lancashire, Mark Owen from Take That.
Lives on Copsdrill Road, yeah.
Nick Grimshaw, the DJ. Kevin Sinfield, the rugby player. Scholesy.
Yep.
Mike Atherton, the cricketer. And George Ford, the rugby player.
Wow.
So whatever's in the water, you want to bottle it. And then some other random stuff about Oldham. The tubular bandage was invented in Oldham in 1961. So think of all the joints that saved. The first fish and chip shop was set up in Oldham's Tommyfield Market back in 1860. And the first test tube baby,
Louise Brown,
was born in Oldham.
There you go.
And whilst this might not be an accurate fact, it's one I do believe myself, Boundary Park, Oldham's football ground, is the coldest football ground in the whole wide world.
Ice Station Zebra.
Yeah. So there's a lot of good stuff goes on in Oldham. Anything for you to finish up on Oldham Branch?
No, that's it.
Just come into Oldham Branch, give you a call.
And I'll be there for you.
And you'll be there for you. Good lad. Right, so I'm going to draw this, I'm going to start drawing this to the close. But I've got four more questions for you. Both. It's quick fire, so it's short and sharp, just a nice way to finish things off. It's all about you, so if you can't answer these, Jan, you've got a problem. Favourite part of your job?
Customer service, definitely.
Customer service.
I love it.
I like it. Paul?
I just love it. I've never wake up in the morning and think I've got to go to work. I just love going to work. I love being at work. I love all my staff. Love most of the customers, some cranks, but I love them all. I just really enjoy the job.
I'm going to have to ask you this because he'll say there isn't one. The most difficult part of your job? Get thinking.
It's managing staff's problems.
The personal problems that complicate.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, okay. That's a good, challenging thing, isn't it? Because there's more, everybody has more and more issues in the lives right now.
Taking all the money in all them. I want it all in all, Alex Timber.
Well, I'm sure you'll give it a good go. The most crucial trait somebody would need to do your job?
Rawhide skin, thick skin. Yeah, you need thick skin.
Jack?
Positivity, definitely.
And the best piece of advice you've ever been given?
Best piece of advice would be just be positive, just keep going.
Just be positive.
Just keep going.
Radiate energy and good vibes. Paul?
Kind of two that are rolled into one. When I was at school, my year ed's motto was always consideration for others. So as long as you're considering other people, then you're going to be okay. And then more recently, a regional manager I know, he always said, always leave somebody in a better place than you find them, if you can. So always leave someone in a better place.
Nice.
That's very good. Nice.
If possible.
Well, listen, thank you both for your time. It's been excellent talking to you both.
Thanks for having us. Thanks for inviting us.
Thank you, Paul.
It's good, and you've set the bar very high for future branches that come in and do one of these sessions with us. So thank you for that. So just to close, I'd just like to say thank you to everybody who's joined us to listen and hear from us. We're looking to do one of these episodes every couple of weeks, so look out for the next one. You can follow us on all our social medias, and we look forward to seeing you next time. Thank you very much. 1, 2, 3.